Heute zu Gast in der Audioaufnahme der Dental Late Night Show, der Breakout Session aus New York mit Co-Host Dr. Stefan Helker, Keith Dreyer. Keith Dreyer ist bei Henry Schein beschäftigt und dort ist er zuständig für die internationalen Schulen von Henry Schein und hat eine Riesenübersicht über die Dinge, die in den verschiedenen Ländern anders laufen. Das heißt, wie läuft es in Kanada, wie läuft es in den USA, wie läuft es in Deutschland und was sind eigentlich hier so die Differences? In meinem perfekten Englisch, Zwinker, Zwinker, habe ich das dann versucht mit Stefan zusammen herauszuarbeiten und da ist eine sehr interessante Episode raus geworden. Wir hören auch viel über die deutsche Geschichte in New York, das war so ein bisschen das Intro und ein bisschen das Outro. Keith erzählt von den Praxen, wie sie sich in New York speziell entwickelt haben, das fand ich auch sehr, sehr spannend. Und auch über, ja, wir schneiden das Thema DSOs so ein bisschen, also diese Kettenbildung und was das eigentlich bedeutet. Ich glaube, das ist eine recht unterhaltsame, in Englisch gehaltene Folge geworden, die ein bisschen lockerer ist als sonst vielleicht. Und er ist ein unglaublich freundlicher Mensch. Ich habe ihn vor Jahren kennengelernt. Der wohnt in Manhattan und er hat gesagt, ja Mensch, ich besuche dich. Und dann ist er hier hochgekommen in den Norden von Deutschland und da waren wir hier in Kappeln Fisch essen, haben einen tollen Tag oder zwei Tage miteinander verbracht und habe ich ihn nochmal vor ein paar Jahren in New York besucht und daraus ist eine Freundschaft entstanden. Und eigentlich ist es ein freundschaftliches Gespräch zwischen uns dreien, von drei Dentalweltbegeisterten. Und aus diesem Gespräch, glaube ich, kann man so ein paar Sachen ziehen und ich wünsche euch viel Spaß dabei. Mein Name ist Christian Henrizi, ich bin Geschäftsführer der Opti Health Consulting. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören.
Welcome to the Dental Late Night Show Breakout Session. And we are very happy to have our special guest, Keith Dreyer, with us. Hello, Keith. How are you today?
Hey, Christian, I'm great. Thank you for having me. Welcome to the United States. I'm glad we are filming right here in Battery Park, Manhattan, the tip of Manhattan, overlooking the beautiful Statue of Liberty, which is a beacon of hope for everybody.
Why did you suggest us, especially the Battery Park, to make the take with you in New York?
I think it's a very meaningful place. Obviously, you and your team came in from Germany. Sure, you're coming in for some tennis as well, which we'll talk about that. And the awesome 22 members of Germany that are playing in the US Open. But the Statue of Liberty is the beacon of hope, of welcome. And the world needs a lot of help now and healing. And hopefully the Statue of Liberty will give us that reminder.
Been here the first time in the Battery Park, but I think it's wonderful. It's a great place to talk about you and about your job. So I would like to start with, can you please explain who are you, where are you from, what are you doing?
My name is Keith Dreyer. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Henry Schein's global dental practice transition business. Currently, we're in about seven countries. We help practitioners with their ownership goals. We help professionals sell their practice at the end of their career. We help emerging groups acquire practices. We help young people out of dental school who've maybe been an associate at one place want to acquire a practice and reap the benefits of ownership themselves. I've been with Henry Schein for 26 years, and I did have part of my career before that. In my time as a student, you may not believe this, but when I was 19 years old, I was a student in England on an exchange program, and then when we were traveling on a Eurel pass, a two-month Eurel pass, it was the greatest thing, I ended up for a day in East Germany when that existed before the wall was torn down. And it's funny because on the news yesterday, you probably saw Gorbachev passed away, and he and Reagan were so instrumental in taking down that wall.
So interesting that you've been, even in student days, back to Germany. So what did you study? Business or study like law?
It was a international finance program, you know, based in the UK. But the opportunity to travel every weekend within the UK and then the 2 months after were really special and meaningful. And you met my wife, Tracy. Yeah. And she and I actually met as participants in England, and we did not know each other from university in New York when we met.
If
before we get into the serious stuff, you are a very busy man, but you surely have some free time off. So what do you do here in New York when you have some of the free time that you surely deserve?
I'm a runner. Not a great one, but I'm a runner. And I've actually run in the world's biggest race with the most amount of participants, which is a 5K in Frankfurt, Germany. And there are about 80,000 participants. They start on three different avenues and end up in their giant park in Frankfurt. And I did that with the Henry Schein team when I was over there one time. And I'm also a marathon runner. And what's interesting, there are six of the world's major marathons. And in a few months, I'll have my number five done. And then my last marathon to do all six of the world majors will be Berlin. Oh. And Berlin is famous because it's the record for the fastest marathon times.
Right, it's a very fast track, yeah.
They say German engineering is so good that also means the asphalt and the streets are kind on runners' knees. Yeah. And the Berlin Marathon, it has a lot of straightaways. And I've been in Berlin many times, and I've run through the Tiergarten, and it's just a beautiful place to run.
Since you've told us that you're a marathon runner, now you have to post your time too. What has been your best time?
I do a lot of marathons. I don't do them quickly, so 4:15.
Okay, very nice. I couldn't run a marathon. I'd die because I'm a heavy guy. I do some weightlifting, so I'm not a good runner. But everybody does what he kind of wants to do and what he feels comfortable with. And probably it's the same in the professional field. So you said that you feel very comfortable with helping dentists, practitioners, taking right choices, acquiring businesses, managing of their business, and at the end of the whole process, getting rid of the business to get the best price. So let's start to dive into the topic. What do you think are the differences between the US market, or maybe you give us an insight of the US market? What's a typical process when you are done with your studies and you want to acquire a business? So what's a typical way of a dentist to acquire a business, or how many people do acquire a business or work as a dentist in an office as employee?
I'll start with actually what's more similar in a lot of the countries, that a dental practice is often an ongoing business with active patients. And that's what the value is when somebody is looking to acquire a practice. Will those patients stay with the new doctor? If a transition is handled professionally and the patients are treated with respect and dignity, they will try the new dentist. They will try the new practice owners. And banks, we find banks in pretty much every country love lending to dentists. Those loans perform well. Very, very, very little risk. Very low default rate. I mean, would you rather lend money to a dentist or to a restaurant? You know, restaurants are hard businesses. They don't all make it, but dentists do okay.
Yeah, they do very well, because I think in Germany it's seldom heard of a dentist who really goes out of business. You have to do a lot of stuff really wrong to go out of business, and that's what banks really love.
Because in the U.S., the default rate for people not paying their loans on dental practices is the smallest of any measurable business.
Okay. The interest rates are low, so for dentists, it's a good thing. You know many markets. You said you acquire and sell in seven countries. What countries are these? And what do you think are the baselines that are the same in every country? And what do you say are the differences of the countries?
So right now, we're the largest broker of dental practices in the US, Canada, England. And we're to smaller degrees in Ireland, in Spain, in Italy, and Germany. That it's really our goal as a value-added service to help practitioners with their professional goals. So the dentistry is changing. Obviously, you know, on your podcasts and videos, you show it. We're in the digital age. You know, high tech, artificial intelligence is coming. It's not only a older dentist retiring that a straight out of dental school associate is acquiring the practice. There are the dental entrepreneurs. We see this in all the countries, that people that want to acquire 8 to 12 practices. So the founder actually stops doing clinical work and then really is running the businesses. You have groups, DSOs, emerging in all the countries as well. And they obviously see dentistry as a way to invest in a good business, but also helping people, expanding access to care. And that's why the groups are adding locations to their footprint, or, you know, in the United States, it's 50 states, and a lot of groups are expanding, you know, from one cluster to another area, and we will partner and help them as well.
What we see in Germany is that the groups, the DSO business is still pretty small. The biggest DSOs in Germany only have 100 offices. Here in the US, it's totally different, right? It's Aspen Dental, I think, is the biggest.
It's not Aspen. I think they're number two or three, but I believe it's Holland.
Do you see a big change in roll over the praxis in the last 10 years? So when you have 65-year-old dentists in like 2010 in order or in comparison to 2020 or 2022, do you see differences?
The fundamental rule is always supply and demand in a geographic region. There are rural areas of the U.S. that you can have a single practitioner grossing $1 million. Now it's pretty much €1 million at parity, but highly profitable. But yet there's a challenge of finding multiple buyers or buyers that want to go to rural areas. Even though their cost of living are lower, their profitability is higher, their work-life balance is strong, patients have a trusting relationship with their doctor. But this is everywhere, that there are rural practices that don't see the same quantity of buyers as urban areas in New York City or Frankfurt or Munich. When we have practices in Boston, San Diego, Washington, D.C., Toronto, near London, that you're going to have prices being bid up over asking price.
Totally got that. So you have the big difference in between the big hotspots and the landscape. So when you go to the landscape, like in Germany, when you go into the Mecklenburg area or into the Lower Saxony area where you're far away from big cities, it became tough in Germany. Is it the same in the United States when you go into the landscape that you have problems finding buyers who pay what you ask for?
There is, but you know, practitioners can do things to set themselves up for a successful outcome. If they're not fully digital now, have a plan, have a roadmap to go digital and to increase your value, to make your practice more attractive. Because a lot of the groups, candidly, would like to see minimum 4 treatment rooms, 2 dentists. Think of it from their shoes. There's less risk for them in acquiring. Yeah. So if you're a practitioner only working out of 2 chairs, you might want to look to expand. People don't like the expense of moving, but that might be your best solution, especially if you have a few years' timeline so you can expand to be more attractive and to keep your options open for what you want to do when it's your time to retire.
I always say when you've got a really small business, like you say, 2 to 3 treatment rooms, you basically sell a job. But if you are bigger, you're selling a company. Maybe a small company, but it kind of has a real value proposition for someone acquiring it, because if someone has to do 100% of the work on their own to keep up what's being basically made in revenue in this office, it's not as attractive as if you get something on top of this, because maybe you have got 2 or 3 or 4 dentists working in the office and generating that revenue for you. And the other thing is, if the dental office is really good, but the owner is the only one who's working it, some of the younger dentists fear overtaking it because they fear that they cannot live up to the expectations, because they start with less experience and less expertise, basically.
What you're also saying is something that's very, in this business of brokerage, it's so important that you do a professional job, that you respect confidentiality. If the dentist is ready to sell, they really need to know that we're going to handle things professionally, that we're going to handle things that treats the staff with dignity and respect, because they're very valuable. Yeah. They're a huge asset in what they're selling, because a dental team that works well together, that's promoting optimal treatment acceptance, that's where the magic happens. And expanding, you know, options for patients, whether it's elective cosmetic work. And once you have a larger practice and you have a bit of a multi-specialty and you're keeping everything kind of in-house without referring out, and the profits will stay under your roof.
The value chain is being kept in-house. That's super valuable because the friction is eliminated. Once you have someone on the outside, a laboratory or maybe a surgeon that you send the patients to, it's always friction because there is one more man in the middle, basically.
But today, and this is a global challenge, nothing to do with US or Germany, there's a lot of staffing challenges. Are dentists able to retain associates or retain their therapists or hygienists? And it's really important that the practice owner value their workers, appreciate them, constantly work on showing their appreciation, because there's a saying in any business that your employees, unless they're happy, no one's going to be happy. You really need to prioritize that, because they're going to interacting with patients directly all the time, and you really need that.
Do you see a difference in the labor shortage in order to the 7 or 8 countries where you, as a manager, working in? So yeah. Is there a difference between Canada, Ireland?
There's a lot of similarities. In the UK, they're having challenges. I mean, we're still having challenges. Hopefully COVID is under control and parents will be able to send their children to school and the school not be virtual, and their routines can be normalized. That really needs to happen for the workforce to get that better. I hope and I think we are trending in the right direction.
Do you see, like in the United States, is there, like in New York or in the Boston area, is there good approach for a dentist to find people for his office? Or in Germany, the last couple of years, salaries went up straight and it's very, very tough to find new associates.
Wusstet ihr schon, dass BFS Health Finance ein umfassendes Angebot an Weiterbildung anbietet? Das abwechslungsreiche Programm bietet immer genau die Themen an, die euch interessieren. Lasst euch von kompetenten Experten überzeugen, profitiert von echten Mehrwerten und vernetzt euch mit Kolleginnen und Kollegen. Ob in atemberaubenden Locations oder online, von genau dem Ort, an dem ihr euch gerne aufhaltet. Mit der BFS werden Fortbildung zum Erlebnis. Alle Infos unter meinebfs.de. Lernen Sie bei unserem Management-Lehrgang, dem Betriebswirt der Zahnmedizin, wie Sie Ihre Praxis in den Bereichen Marketing, Führung, BWL, Organisation und vielem mehr optimal aufstellen können. Unser Lehrgang ist sowohl für Zahnmedizinerinnen als auch für zahnärztliches Fachpersonal geeignet. Die bunte Mischung aus Themen, Referenten und Teilnehmern sorgt für unsere einzigartige Fortbildung im schönen Schloss Wolfsbrunn. Weitere Informationen und die Anmeldeunterlagen finden Sie unter www.betriebswirt-zahnmedizin.de.
Because of inflation, because of the competitive landscape, salaries have been going up for associates, for the office staff. When you're in a competitive situation, if you're running a good practice and treating people with respect, just like you get reviews from patients, how you treat your staff make it easier to obtain other staff or not. So the decision is, the dentists do great jobs clinically, working on their continuing education, being up on the latest technology, but they also need to focus on their skills of running a practice, of treating people well, and that includes their staff.
Do you also think, because I'm pondering on the importance of employer branding, on the recruiting process, on the onboarding process, and after that, that you have a really good corporate manual, that you basically standardize all the procedures in the office so people have orientation. So do you think that more resources have to be allocated to this process, from basically communicating with your staff to find people who are like you? And then when you have someone applying to you, that you basically do everything to bring those people into your culture?
Having a system in place is great. Not every dentist has an employee handbook or have any systems, especially the smaller practices. And the opposite of being systematic is chaos. And who wants to work in a chaotic environment where everything's on a fly versus having the playbook, knowing what to do, having those morning huddles as a team, continuously working on team harmony. It's not a do this in the part of the orientation of a new employee. It's dedicated to constantly working on team harmony. Yeah. It's a constant process.
Right, values and purpose and all that. People want to know the why. Why do they get to work? And I think it's still not common in dental practices to have these things. They're just not done because the owners focus on their treatment and they think that's enough. But I think in the future, it will not be enough.
Right, because you're treating people. You're not just treating a tooth.
Right.
You're treating people. And especially now that pretty much every country, we all get that the oral health and total health correlation. And you can't have total health without proper oral health. And that gives people more of a meaning and satisfaction that they're really working on the total person and improving their total health. And cosmetic dentists are giving people self-esteem.
Exactly. The people have to know what's behind the treatment. We're not just fixing teeth. We are creating smiles. We're creating moments and all that. And I think that most doctors know this internally, but they have to communicate it much better to their employees so they know that they're doing something of importance.
One of the most fun things and great things that we do in the United States, Henry Schein, we get behind a program called Give Kids a Smile, where it's a national day of providing treatment, free treatment to underserved populations. We do it in convenient locations all across the U.S. And you're giving kids a smile. You're giving them self-esteem. They're not missing days off from school because they have a toothache that is totally preventable. And it's so many thousands of offices, the doctors and their staff volunteer. And things like this happen in every country. Well, you know, Henry Schein, we back our mission of mercy of providing treatment in more rural areas, under very underserved areas. At Temple University in Philadelphia, they had a mission of mercy to provide free dental care, no questions asked, to urban people of Philadelphia that don't have a dental practice they call their own.
So, Keith, I want to get a step back to the labor topic again. So do you see a trend where you try to immigrate people out of other countries?
We're working on a program in Spain for Spanish dentists, pretty much straight out of dental school, to have a 1 to 2 year apprenticeship program in England where they can be licensed as an apprentice under a supervising dentist to work there. So we're really excited about that.
I think this is even great for the dentist, and a lot of young founders, young dentists who want to establish their own practice ask me and ask my team members for a special, this topic, where to work for like 1 or 2 or 3 years in another country to learn other dental practices. And it's very, very tough to, first of all, get access to other universities. It's actually a big business in Germany. You pay up to like 35,000 euros to get even the connect to a university. And it's very tough to find like 1 year or 2 year opportunity to work in like New York or in other countries. But in order to the staff, do you think, will it be a kind of possibility for like the US practices to find a staff in like Mexico or South America or Asia or Europe?
Licensing everywhere is a very complicated issue. It's just very, very complicated. So it will take a lot of people to do that because wherever there's supply and demand inequities, if you bring in a supply from another country, what are you doing to the oral health needs of that country?
Yeah.
So it's complicated, but it's interesting what you say, though. There's so much excitement in dentistry, so much for young people to learn in dental school, genetics, gene therapy, so many clinical needs that didn't exist. Digital workflow. They're teaching students finally comprehensive digital workflow, which is great. But they don't have time to say to dental students, let's give you a small 6-month MBA, or you're going to be a small business owner. You're going to employ 20 people.
Right.
This is what you need to know about marketing,
human
resources. They just don't have time because there's so much clinical demands of dental school. And that's why young people should look for mentors either successful dentists to build out their network. Even in dental school, they should start thinking about building out a network of advisors and trusted people to help them. Because the previous generation, they've done pretty well. They've reaped the rewards. There's obviously a trend, a heck of a lot less extractions and more saving the tooth. And now we've created demand as the populations in Europe and the US, Canada, are populations are getting older. But these are now more older people who have more retained teeth than the generation before them. So there's going to be a lot of work for dentists going forward.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I kept saying this in some of my videos that you should get a mentor really, really early, because once you are in that really big wheel going on, you will not have time for it. You don't get out of that wheel anymore because you have your own business. You won't go 3 months to New York and watch someone doing excellent dentistry and excellent entrepreneurship. So what I think is that they don't need to be so impatient because we're going to live to 100. People going to work longer, so you spend those 2 to 3 years between 25 and 30 educating yourself, getting better, prepare yourself for being a really good entrepreneur, a really good communicator. And I think this is going to be a really big market. And there's also probably, and this is what I want to ask you, do you think that really big units, really big offices are going to have people from different fields managing those big units because the dentist says, okay, I'm going to bring it to some degree, maybe 20, 30, 40 employees. But after that, if we get bigger, I'm going to have someone managing finance, managing marketing and all that.
It's not a one specific number, but there is transition or transformational change when somebody hits those 8 to 10 practices. Are they bringing in a CFO instead of having a bookkeeper, somebody with more business acumen? Are they looking at acquiring practices? Of course, you must have a cultural fit on what you're acquiring, but is the cash flow sufficient? Will a bank lend to you because they look at the active patient count and they say, yes, this business should perform well?
Yeah, so 8 to 10 units, what would you say would be the average unit size in that thing? Like 20 employees, 50 employees? So how much is the total cluster of people working in such a business that you just pointed out?
It varies place to place. Like Manhattan, sure, you have some very big offices, but real estate's expensive. So to have 30 operatories, that's a real big operation, and not that many people are ready to run those kind of things. I mean, there are experienced leadership that is out there that's doing a great job in making changes in the dental industry. So it depends where you're at, rural, urban,
yeah,
opportunities. Most groups do not want to own real estate versus a lot of sole practitioners have said, hey, owning real estate has actually been a good investment over my career. But the new owners may not want to own that real estate. They'd rather use their money to invest and acquire other profitable dental practices.
Right, because it's faster. I mean, if you build on your own, that's what I experience now in Germany.
In Germany, there are, though, when Germany has a higher percentage of startups than, let's say, the United States. And the reason is because you can start up a practice in a lot of places and have sufficient patient flow right away.
So what's the average amount of money a dentist spends on an office, let's say, in a bigger city in the US versus maybe Europe, Germany, UK? Is it different or is it the same, or what's your experience?
Technology is a wonderful thing, but it's not cheap. But fortunately, there is access to capital. So it's all about what are the monthly payments compared to the benefit? So you can go full digital, full CAD/CAM. Full scanning, full interacting with a digital lab, and you should have the patient flow to make that work.
You'd probably recommend to someone who's starting to invest in this infrastructure right away, instead of like basically saving money in the beginning and maybe say, okay, I'm going to upgrade later. You'd say invest that money at the start to have a good workflow, to have more upside for your business.
So years ago, they used to say, back in the day when there were dark rooms in film, I don't know if you remember that from dental school, but you could have an extra room for emergency patients that if you're booked and they, you know, what do you do when one of your patients, your steady patients, calls and they chip the tooth or something more serious and they need to see you now? By having a extra room, you can see emergency patients without turning them away, because when you have a true emergency and you need care, you have to get it from somebody. And you can't say, I'm sorry, I'm booked out for the next 2 weeks. We'll get you in eventually. So in the beginning, by having an extra empty room, or in the very beginning, having a room that you may not have even plumbed and equipped, that's okay to maybe, you know, a few months in, see how busy you are and how booked up you are, to then equip that room later once you have more patients.
I want to step into the topic, what you're doing with Shine here in the United States. So what is the process when a practice owner comes to you guys and say, okay, I want to sell my practice? What are you talk in the beginning of the interview, the confidentiality, the trust is very important, but what are the exact steps you follow up on?
On my team, we have what we call certified valuation analysts. We have quite a few of them, and we start with the valuation of the dental practice. And we have, we'll take, of course, the few years financials, the tax returns, and our other questions about the active patient count. And depending where you're at, the value of the practice, a large component of it is goodwill. It's the price of your active patients. And we'll come up with that valuation, and we do these on small practices, maybe a few hundred thousand, and up to 50 million. But what's very different in the U.S. and Germany are the privacy laws. For instance, a small practitioner in the U.S. has no problem doing a patient record sale, that they could take their patients, and there's even a few ways of doing that. Either the buyer could pay over the next few years based on production, what they're getting from that patient, or based on a dollar amount per active record. But in Germany, I believe because of your privacy, you really need the patient's consent to move their record and for another dentist.
Yeah, it's going to be totally anonymous. It's just basically a P&L. So.
It's different, but that's okay. It's just different. And fortunately, we have a great track record in all the countries that we serve of the banks looking at our valuations and saying, yes, we will support the buyer getting a loan for 500,000 euro, million, whatever the amount is, 2 million, based on this valuation.
Do you see a shift in that business that even private young dentists can raise a capital from 2 to 5 million from the banks? And the second question to it is, what is the current, just for comparison cases, what's the current interest rate you have to pay in the United States approximately?
I mean, the interest rate is going to vary depending on your needs. If you need a single piece of equipment, you could still get that in the 4% range in the U.S. If you need the money for 7 years or 10 years to acquire a practice, you're going to pay a little more than that. But it's all about the cash flow, and will the financials support the debt payment? And also in the United States, student debt loads are a lot higher than Europe. Right? 10 times as much.
You see private dentists who will establish their business that they pay $2 to $5 million for a practice?
With a track record, yes. That's the key thing. If you're 26 years old and fresh out of dental school, maybe not. But if you have a clean credit, and that's why, again, you know, they just don't have enough time in dental school to teach people how to protect their credit and to, you know, don't strike out before you get up to bat. Don't jeopardize your ability because you did things a little reckless. Not just because you get that fresh DVS degree, you shouldn't be driving a 7 Series BMW. Maybe a 3 Series. Yeah. Then work your way up.
Exactly. You can drive it later. It's all about postponing your rewards, basically, right?
Yeah, but then again, if you have $80,000 debt on that new 7 Series Beamer, plus $300,000 from your education, the bank may not want to lend a few million dollars to you. If you're more responsible and your credit is good, and this is in any country, the bank will look at it and say, hey, dentist practices do well. Banker says, we've got a portfolio of loans that are doing well. We're in the business to lend money. That's how we make money. And they'll hopefully get to yes. And of course, you need a plan to be thought out. And that's also why it's important to get mentors and advisors during your dental school days. And to volunteer and to get exposure with the professional community is a good thing.
So, Keith, we started up in Battery Park, talking about the Battery Park. We want to end talking about a thing here in New York. And what do you think, what kind of German history is in New York City?
I know one of the most beautiful German-American success stories in the world. What's the best piano in the entire world? Henry Steinway is his Americanized, anglicized name. In the 1850s, he came over to America from Hamburg and in Queens, where they still manufacture Steinway pianos, the best in the world. They only make pianos in two places, in Hamburg and in Queens, New York. So how cool is that? When you were in New York, you and I, we had dinner together on the Upper East Side in Yorkville. Yorkville used to be called Germantown. And there are still restaurants there that have been making their own sausage since the 1930s. So you can get bratwurst and homemade pretzels also. We do have a Hofbräu House in New York. I've been to the giant Hofbräu House tent in Munich for Oktoberfest, which was not a good idea to try to run the morning after going to Oktoberfest.
Was it not your best time, probably?
No, with a big headache.
As you mentioned, Germantown. So when did they rename it to Yorkville?
Probably in the late 40s because of the war. But if you look at, here we are in Battery Park, there's a rumor that one of his homes, I don't know how much he's here, Leonardo DiCaprio has a home here in Battery Park, and his mother is German. She's from a town near Dortmund. So a German-American success story again.
German-American relationship from the Konrad Adenauer House. It was a present to you a couple of years. When did you receive
that? A few years ago, I've been in Germany with the Adenauer Institute for meetings and in other countries as well. And they do really great things.
Okay, so Keith, thanks so much for your time, for your appreciation of our German-American friendship, of knowing you, of having a great time the last couple of years and seeing you again after 3 years we haven't seen us to COVID.
Yeah, at the end, let me mention, if you guys on the other side of the camera have questions about the topics we talked about today, just write them in the comments. If you hear this via podcast, you can write an email. If you see this on YouTube, just write a comment. Keith, thank you so much for your valuable time. It was a really, really interesting interview. And I think people in Germany are really grateful for the insight of the US and other markets. And we hope we're going to see you the next time we are in New York.
Please do. Dankeschön.
Sehr gerne.
Dankeschön.
Ja, das war's wieder. Ich glaube, das waren 40 Minuten strammes deutsch-englisches Englisch. Und im Battery Park, ja, direkt vor der Freiheitsstatue. Also ganz, ganz toller Ort zu einer tollen Jahreszeit New York. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Die nächste Episode, da geht es wieder mitten rein in die Staffel Tellerrandwissen. Und ich habe da auch wieder einen ganz, ganz spannenden Gast. Ja, seid gespannt darauf. Bis zur nächsten Woche. Wenn euch das gefallen hat, dann seid so gut und geht zu Spotify und iTunes und bewertet mich mit 5 Sternen und schreibt einen kleinen Text dazu. Das hilft wahnsinnig beim Algorithmus. Ihr seht, das ist alles kostenfrei hier und das ist wirklich, wo ihr mir einen kleinen Gefallen tun könntet und ich würde mich sehr darüber freuen. Bis dahin, bleibt gesund und munter, ihr und euer Christian Henrici.